is the anthem of the adventurer. The show for men who are tired of forsaking their dreams, who are willing to risk, to dare greatly, and know in their soul that their desire for adventure is good. It's time to venture into the wild places in our hearts. Here's your host, Dan Sayner.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Anthem of the Adventurer. So glad you could join us. I'm your host, Dan Sayner. A little bit of housekeeping before we get going into our interview today with a new friend that we met through an old friend. That'll be clear in a minute. As you've heard of the past few episodes, we are going to be sunsetting this podcast in its current iteration, taking a bit of a sabbatical and focusing on writing my first book, which is as crazy to say as it is to do. You guys know how much I love podcasting, and it pains me to stop, even for a little while. So, really appreciate all your support over the past 4.5 years while I've been doing this. Been an amazing ride to get to share a bit of life with you and meet some amazing new people. And a lot of that work is inspiring this writing. So very much looking forward to continuing that process. Make sure that you follow us on Instagram and our creative team and our blog on anthemoftheadventurer.com. Natalie and Jeff and Armando are all writing amazing things all the time, and we still do have our monthly adventure challenges, and that won't be going anywhere, so make sure that you follow along with all that. Speaking of monthly adventure challenges, back in October, actually before this episode aired, sorry Jonathan, this took a while to get edited. Jonathan Hardesty and I met actually through a mutual friend of ours, Joshua Spodek, so thanks Josh for the introduction. Jonathan has an incredible story. So back in 2002, Jonathan embarked on this journey to pursue a career in art. He had no prior experience making art at all, but he set his sights on this goal, becoming a professional artist. And his journey was unique in that he began logging every step of the process. There was an art blog website called conceptart.org, which sadly doesn't exist anymore. He posted every single drawing or painting that he created without fail, over 9 years. Think about that. He worked for 9 years, and everyone who followed along could see all the struggle, all the frustration, and the moments of success that came along with his journey. It's incredible. So there's an amazing video, which you'll see in the show notes for this episode, that was created by Mark Erdman, showing the transformation process that Jonathan went through 9 years, going from fully novice artist to an amazing painter, especially in textures. And oh my goodness, he does a really amazing work. He has an incredible growth mindset and just a whole lot of fun to hang out with. So if you haven't checked it out yet, we did a live draw along for Inktober back in October that you can find on our Facebook page, which was a whole lot more fun to film than it is to watch. I will be the first to admit that. But if you soldier through it, you'll see a bit of my own journey as a very much amateur artist. And it was a whole lot of fun to film. So check that out as well. And enjoy this interview with Jonathan Hardesty. All right. Welcome to another episode of the Anthem of the Adventurer. I'm your host, Dan Sayner. Super excited to talk to what I'm sure is going to be a new friend for life, Jonathan Hardesty. Man, it's good to see you. Nice
hey, to meet you. Glad today. To be here, man. This is fun. I know we're already like pre-recording. We're already, we have a rapport, and it's been fun. It's been good.
I really can tell good. You're the kind of guy that I could talk to for hours. And with the challenge that you're going to give here, I feel like that might present itself with an opportunity for that if you come up this direction. So why don't you lay down your challenge, and then we'll get into the rest of our conversation today.
All right. Now, I thought about a lot of things. I thought about different things. I thought about maybe skydiving or doing something like that, you know, for the challenge or whatever. But my son and I have been talking about doing an adventure, like a road trip he and I, we were like kicking around the idea, and I thought it'd be really awesome to force myself to do it, to say, I've got to do this in the next month to take him out of state. It has to be somewhere out of state. And
which is hard from Texas.
Yeah, it's big.
Depending on where in Texas you live.
Definitely big. We're in the north, northeast Texas. We're in like North Dallas. So okay. It's, you can get to Oklahoma in like 2 or 3 hours or whatever. So that's not too bad. It's like, you know, we could do it. It's achievable. It's definitely achievable. So I think he and I could we're going to find an adventure out of state. We're going to do it. It's going to be fun. So, and then we'll report back on that. And I'll, yeah. we're going to make it as adventurous as possible.
That sounds awesome. That. Yeah. That sounds awesome. Well, if you make it up to Indiana, give me a holler.
All right. All right.
We'll have a good time.
That would be fun. We might be able to do that. Actually, that'd be fun.
Do a little bit of archery. We could maybe do some, we've got some places to go mountain biking around here.
Dude, I might take you up on that. Seriously. Like I might take you up on that. Well, we'll talk more about that afterwards, but
yeah,
but that actually would be, he would absolutely flip out. And actually there's a book that I read. I don't know if you've ever read it called Raising a Modern Day Knight. You know what I mean?
I've heard of it, but I haven't read it.
Yeah. Actually, so it talks about
a buddy of mine in my ruck club was talking to me about that.
Yeah.
Book,
it's so good. It's good. And it talks about these moments of when, you know, they use the analogy of knights going from a squire to whatever it is, like a page next or something. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what it is, but those levels, cause it was a while ago I read it, but you know, looking at your son in that way and saying he's hitting this milestone and then having a ceremony of mm-hmm. sorts to give them a concrete moment in time to know I have transitioned from being a little kid to now being, you know, like a pre-adult and then
yeah.
transitioning into adulthood.
Yep.
Because a lot of times, like you think about that, like, you know, people will say like, well, when did you become a man or whatever? And like people have all these like, all kinds of answers, yeah. all sorts of things. You know what I mean?
30.
And yeah, right. Right. And it's like, and no one really knows, you know, and it, like, they'll just be like, well, no one really knows like, well, what, you know, what is manhood and when does that happen? And what, you know, and mm-hmm. so it's all those things. And so having those defined moments of saying, hey, let's do this. And you're older now. And these are your responsibilities. These are this. And having that ceremony is amazing. So anyways, this, what I was going to say is that this trip could, he's sort of transitioning and it would be fun to have those conversations on the road trip up there yeah. and be able to start talking about that. And cause he's 11 and he's, you know, going to be, he turned 11 this year, but he really has had a transition this past year. I've seen him sort of change. He's become more responsible and made some, mm-hmm. you know, decisions and has I've been able to lean on him a little bit more family wise and stuff. He's doing better. So,
yeah.
So it might be the right time for the next
awesome.
Sort of transition.
Well, from our pre-recording conversation, it sounds like you're familiar with the John Eldridge world
right,
a bit.
And, right.
I mean, it goes right along with his book, Fathered by God.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yep. Yep,
I'll share something with you off air here, a little document I put together that's kind of a refinement of that, of like, what are the skills and experiences that a man needs to be confident in each of those mm-hmm. stages?
Yep.
Like,
yep.
My son's 8, or uh-huh. he's not 8 yet. He seems like he's 8. He's 7. He'll be 8 in October. But like he's in that beloved son stage. And right now he just needs to be confident in the fact that he's safe and secure and that
that's
he's
right.
loved.
That's right.
You know, and then when he gets into that ranger stage, the next yep. one, he needs to be confident in the fact that he's able to be independent
right.
and persevere and do hard things.
That's right. That's right.
And so what kinds totally. Of experiences do we get to usher our sons in to help them become confident in those things?
Exactly.
And then what kinds of skills yeah. are they going to need to develop yep. to be able to have those experiences? And
that's
what
right.
should we introduce in terms of study and things that we learn mm-hmm. together and invite them to learn outside of school? That will help right. them build those skills. So
yeah, totally. Like, and it's tough, isn't it? As a parent, like it's tough to know. I think that's one of the hardest things for me is understanding. Cause I've got 3 kids. So I got Sam, he's 11. And then I've got Violet, she's 9. And Pippin is our youngest. Pip, we call her Squeaks. Cause it's like Pip Squeak.
Oh, that's
and
awesome.
She's 4. And so,
so
we've got those 3. So, but understanding when, and each one's different, of course. Mm-hmm. And this question is answered, of course, differently for each kid. But understanding when to let them, when and where to let them fall on their face, sort of, you know, yeah. you know what I mean? Like you have to, like you can't do everything for them, but you also can't leave them to their own devices. So like everything in between is such a, and it's always changing. They're changing all the time. You're changing all the time. Like the subtlety that's required in that and the knowledge of them and who they are and what their weaknesses are, what their strengths are and who they, like all that stuff. It's just, that's so tricky to know when to let them fail and when yeah. to kind of step in. And, you know, that's always a balancing act. And so, yeah, like those different stages, like, okay, well now, like there's certain things with my son, Sam, where I'm like, he's like, well, why didn't you remind me about this thing? I'm like, it's not my job to remind you. Like recently, recently I was saying yep. he had something real important. And I said, well, you wrote down your schedule, right? And he goes, yeah. And I said, well, that's your fault. I was like, go apologize and do this. I was like, you did it, you know? Because it's
I'll help
like
you come up with a better system,
but, right? You know, right? It's like it's not my job to remember for you. I was like, we talked about this. I was like, it's on you, you know. And oh, okay. Well, and so they have to fail, and you know they're gonna do it. Like you see it coming. Yeah. I'm like, I know he's gonna forget about this, you know. But yep. you got to, and so that's tough. That's very tough, you know, to know when to do that and to actually do it. You know,
yeah,
it is tricky.
Because yeah, we don't like. Cool. To see our kids in pain,
right?
To, like have things break down for them, but
yeah,
that's how they grow.
Yeah, yeah. And then you know, yeah, there's certain times when you know, like I've had different, you know, extended family or whatever, and their kids have gone real far off the like path or whatever, and they've had to say like, and the kids at the time were really angry with the parents for saying like, hey, listen. Like you just got to go do your thing and we have to let you go do it because this is not right or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then they've come back later and say, you know, thank you for the tough love, so to speak, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's so, so hard for the parents at the time, you know, the parents, you know, that's like one of the most difficult things to do, you know? Yeah. So, well, we'll see. I'm getting a teenager soon. So we'll see how it all turns out.
Yeah. Good on you. We're a few years yeah. behind. We got a 7-year-old, a 5-year-old and a 2.5-year-old.
Okay. So you kind of have like the same,
similar,
it's
similar
like two splits. Years. And yeah. then, yeah, that's a similar split. Yeah. I mean, we had a little bit more between my daughter, my second and my third, but
yeah. And we've got our second and third, our daughters too, which is, it's an interesting dynamic. Yeah. You know, when you yes. get the girls in the mix and
that's true. Man. That's totally true. It does flip things and it flips the script and it's fun though. But that would be cool, man. Like I'll definitely will hit you up on that. That would be really fun. And cause I mean, all that stuff, dude, he loves that stuff, throwing axes. And like, we went to a rally. We were talking about rally racing before and
man.
He went yeah. to, we went to a rally and one of the things he remembers like really strongly, I mean, he's super into rally, wants to race and stuff, but he remembers this guy had a throwing axe and he was throwing it at a tree for like 3 hours. He still remembers that. He's like, is that guy that guy's the axe thrower, right? And I was like, well, he's not really the axe thrower. I was like, he just had an axe. He's like, I remember yeah. that. He loves that stuff. He loves it.
Oh my gosh. So, depending on COVID,
yeah.
if they have it this year, every year in October, there's this thing called the Feast of the Hunter's Moon.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
West Lafayette, Indiana. And it's like all sorts of, like it's supposed to mimic like the French and the British and the Native Americans coming together in the early 1800s.
Okay.
And you know, people in period dress and there's tomahawk cool. throwing and there's playing awesome. Lacrosse and fry that's bread awesome. And they've got yeah. cannon demonstration and muskets and all sorts
that's
of stuff.
That's so fun, man. Yeah, like I eat that stuff up. So I know my son would too. He'd be even more like, this is awesome, you know?
Oh man. Yeah. It's a blast. I you know, knocking on wood that can happen this fall.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who knows these days, but
I know, man, for real.
Hold everything loosely.
I know. Like, and it's actually better in Texas than it was in when we just moved from Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania was like shut down, open, shut down, open, shut down, open. And Texas seemed to be a sort of like a smoother.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was, but it seemed like that to me, like it was like a smoother progression from one thing to the next. It was a little bit more predictable. In Pennsylvania, it was like that. It was like, I don't know what's happening next week. Who knows? You know,
yeah, the predictability is something that gets a lot of us, myself included. It's just, okay, I don't know what to do. So I'm just not going to do anything, you know?
Right. Right. You try because you don't want to organize an event and all those people that are spending the money and doing all that, like, you know, doing all the groundwork. Like if you spend all that time and everything, that's tough. You know, you might get bit in the butt for that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's
so that before we go down that deep, dark rabbit hole yes. of planning and uncertainty, man,
that's right.
The reason we came together was our mutual friend, Josh Spodek, had you on his podcast. And I was like, this guy seems awesome and right up my alley for, I mean, one reason among many.
He said the same about you.
So I appreciate that. Josh is so too kind. But he was talking about your art project of over the course of, I mean, years.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I'm just going to do a drawing a day and just get better and persevere. Yeah. And I love that idea. So can you talk a little bit about how, like,
sure,
kind of that fits into your greater life story a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So I did a bunch of things when I was younger, and like, it's a long story, but I was like, it was like, My friends and I, we were in a band for like 7 years, and we like started doing stuff on the East Coast, and we started playing a lot and stuff. And then after college, I did it all the way up through college too. My wife was like, yeah, I'm not going to get married to a musician who's touring and doing this kind of, and like being up till like 2 a.m. and stuff like that. And I was like, yeah, this is not, and I didn't want it either. The day to day of being in a band is actually horrible. I think like being in the studio and stuff is fine, but being up late in these like skanky places and just like living in a hotel basically or whatever. It's like, and I didn't even get that far into it. Like, we weren't even doing that kind of thing, but I could just see, I was already getting bored of our songs with what we were doing 3 or 4 times a week or whatever. So anyways, I tried that. And then we did like a little film company thing. We were just having some fun with that. And we would like film people's weddings to get money to do our other projects, you know? And so I always kicked around a bunch of things and wanted to be a basketball player when I was younger. And then my dad was like, you're not too tall. And I was like, I might be like 6 foot. And he's like, well,
hockey? You ever play hockey?
Right. Right. And I wasn't, but then I realized too, like in high school, I was like, I didn't want to push to be like the best in that particular thing or whatever. So anyways, all that kind of culminated into, like, after I graduated college, I went to Bible college, and I was like, okay, I'm going to be a pastor. And what's so funny is like, my wife was like, she said to me there, she goes, you're not going to be a pastor. And this is what I love about my wife. And I said, I was like all offended. I said, what the heck? She goes, I can tell you right now, you're not going to be a pastor. And I said, why not? And she's like, I just know I can, you know, and she's right, like vocationally. So I'm still like, I would preach and I did it a couple of times, and people were like, oh, that was great. You know? And my dad does that. He's an archaeologist and a pastor and a teacher.
Cool.
And does that. Yeah. It's cool. It's fun stuff. I can say he's an archaeologist. He's involved with archaeology. It's not like his primary thing. Primary thing is like teaching and preaching, but he does archaeology. He goes to Israel, like, you know, every year and has some time there and he hasn't been able to, he's older now, so he hasn't been able to do some of the digs that he did, but anyways, I was going to head down that path sort of. I thought that sounded interesting. I was like, let's do that. Cause I grew up talking to him about that stuff. And, so I studied like ancient languages. I studied like Greek and Hebrew. I forgot all that stuff now, so I left and I was like, well, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to be involved with archaeology or whatever textual criticism. I was like, so what am I going to do? So I just got this job at University of Pennsylvania. And I'm looking around at these people, and it was a horrible, like, I would push open the door to my job and I would just get the sick feeling in my stomach. And like, I was getting soft and like fat and like couldn't run, you know, like, I mean, like I couldn't run for long distances without being tired. And like, you know, it's like after college, you start gaining that weight.
Yeah.
You start like, you know, and I wasn't big, I wasn't huge or anything, but it was just over
where you're, you know, ideal by enough of a margin that's noticeable.
That's right. I used to tell my friends, they were always like, well, you're not fat. Cause I used to tell them, man, I'm getting out of shape. And I said, well, if you cut me open, like Twinkies will fly out or something. That's what I used to tell them. I was like, you know, so I just was like, and I was looking around and everybody was miserable. They all hated their job. They didn't want to be there. And I was looking at the people that were like 40, 45. And I was like, that's me. This is when I was about 21. I said, that's me in 20 years. I was like, that's where I'm going to be. And I said, I gotta do something. I can't do this. Like I said, I gotta do something else. And so I literally for a day at my job sat down and said, what would be the best job ever? And I said, okay, so let's just write it out. I wanted something creative, didn't want a boss. I wanted to work, have a fluid schedule, wanted to do, you know, like all these different things. I just took the whole day and just thought about it. They probably thought I was just sitting there like meditating or something, but because I was probably just looking straight down, but I was like thinking about it. And then I would write stuff down and like think about it. And then I said, well, man, what fits all these things? I said, an artist fits all these things. I said, I could be an artist. And I said, all right, well, cool. I'm going to be an artist. And I said, I guess that's it. You know? So I tell some people and they're like, what? And they're like, oh, did you draw when you were younger? I was like, nope.
Nope. Like, do you draw now? Not yet.
Right. So I go home and I'm like, I guess I'll just do. And I saw somebody that had done a self-portrait. I think I saw like Rembrandt's self-portrait or something. And I said, okay, well, let me try a self-portrait. And I tried it. And you know, like Napoleon Dynamite, where he gives that girl that gift. That's like,
yeah.
And he's like, I spent 2 hours shading your upper lip. That's basically, that's basically what it was like. It was so bad, man. It was so bad. And my wife saw it and she was kind of like, I asked her, I said, well, what do you think? She said, you can do it. You can do it. She said, and I asked her later, I said, that was a horrible drawing. She goes, yes, it was legitimately horrible. She said, but I know you, she said, and I knew if you wanted to do it, you could do it, you know? And
my wife is a very intuitive individual.
Dude, she is like, so it's so funny because like, even in college, like it would be easy for me. Like I would take classes. I would study for the test and I could remember that stuff. So all like book smarts and stuff. Like I'm not highly intelligent or whatever, but like that side of kind of getting by, I could do it. And she would always have to spend twice as much time. And she would always get so frustrated. Mm-hmm. And she would always say like, oh, you're smarter than me. And now she knows better, but it's like, but I'm always like, no, actually you're much more intuitive, much more like I'm an idiot with so much stuff that, you know, it's like, you couldn't possibly call me intelligent because it's like of the dumb things I do. She'll be like, we just went to their house. This is the 20th time. And you don't know the direction to go. I'm like,
you don't know their kids' names,
right?
Ages and things.
Dude, it's like, or anything.
I don't even remember what I ate for breakfast.
I'm so bad. Like it's hard for, she's very gracious when she communicates with me too. Cause I'll be like, did I say that? And she's like, yeah, you didn't say that. You said that. And I'm so anyways, it's funny, but she's very intuitive. She is.
She saw in you the ability to, if you stuck with it, you know, yeah. And it didn't get down on yourself for how bad it looks now.
Right. Right.
Like if you do it enough, it's going to look good. Like that's how art works.
Well, and that's how I viewed it. So the funny thing is when I started telling other people about it, I started doing it. My drawings were bad, right? So they would see the bad drawings. Like they were horrible. So I'd say, this is what I'm going to do for a living. And they were like, there was a real disconnect. And it was so funny because I would get people and so many people would say this to me, that it started to make me angry after a certain amount of time. Cause they would say to me, they'd say, well, there's a reason it's called starving artist and there's this, and you're never going to make money doing that. So I finally started saying, I mean, so many people were down on the idea. Mm-hmm. It was amazing. Like everyone was like, oh, you know, like that. It was like this conversation, like killer. When I said I wanted to be an artist or whatever, they were like, oh, this guy's delusional or whatever. He doesn't understand. You can't really do that for a living and stuff. And for me, I thought, well, there's people doing it so I can do it. But, mm-hmm. but I started asking people at that point when they had all those doubts, I used to say, well, did you know someone who failed as an artist then? And none of them said yes. They all said, well, no. I said, well, do you know any artists? And they're like, well, no. I said, well, do you know any framers? Do you know any gallery owners? Do you know? No. And I'd ask them all these questions. They'd say no. And then I'd say, then why do you think you can give me an opinion on this?
Yeah. Where's your proof?
Right. Right. I said, I don't know anything about chemistry. I was like, I can't tell you whether you could make it as a chemist. I said, I don't know what that means. You know, mm-hmm. I was like, why do you think you know? And I said, galleries are filled with art. I was like, artists are making stuff for movies, for games, for what. I was like, everything. I was like, there's artists everywhere. I was like, your shirt, the graphic on your shirt, you know, it's all made by artists. I was like, don't tell me I started taking that and kind of using it as fuel. So I was working at the time at University of Pennsylvania and I said, all right, I can take classes here for free and I'll get my master's of fine art. I was like, this is going to be great. This is like an Ivy League place. That was the job that was tough. I was like basically just filing all the time. It was mm-hmm. like, ugh.
That is tough.
I said, listen, we should convert our files to digital. I tried to get involved and they just like squashed that. They were
follow
like,
the process. Yes, this is the yes, process. It yeah, will always like, be the process. It has always been the process.
That's right. And they were like, just file. That's drink basically the what they told me. Yeah. They were like, just, and I was like, I said to my friend, I said, I cannot live the rest of my life like scrambling for whatever, for the sun-dried tomato bagel at lunch and complaining that I wasn't the one that got it or something. I was like, this is miserable. I was like, this is pointless and dumb. So I started taking classes there, but they were teaching. It wasn't what I wanted. They were basically just telling me to express myself. And a lot of university art classes are like that. And this is what gave me a little bit more understanding for why people were like, you can't do this for a living. Because if that's the way you function, it's like near impossible to do that for a living. To be, you know, you don't have a skill set. You just have to be like a, like somebody that's able to like influence people, I guess, or whatever, you know, but they were just like, express yourself. And I said, well, this is drawing one. I want to learn to draw, you know?
And yeah, so like, I need the tools and then I can express myself.
Right. Right. Exactly. And so I started looking around for what I should do. And what I had been doing up to that point, this is kind of what you were talking about. To keep myself accountable, I would post every day on this site called conceptart.org. Mm-hmm. And so it was a bunch of concept artists and illustrators. So they would do illustrations or do art for games or different things like that. And it was, they started a website where it was just a bunch of people that were trying to get better at art. And so I saw like there was an artist, specifically Andrew Jones. He was doing a self-portrait every day. And so he, I was like, if he can do that every day, I was like, I'll post something every day. So I just started posting stuff and nobody cared for like years, you know, like I just was posting every day. And, but that was happening at the same time. So one of the people on there actually said to me, listen, if you really want your skill set, there's this type of school. It's called like atelier training, where it's classical. It's like super intense. It's like boot camp, you know, it's like 8 or 10 hours a day. And like, your goal is to make this stuff not look good, but look super real. Like, you'll have a cast over here and you'll have your paper right here. And you have to make this one look like if someone looked through a window, they would think it was a sculpture, you know?
Wow.
And so it's like a month, 2 months, 3 months on one drawing sometimes, you know, depending on the complexity, just to learn the skills, like to kind of push yourself to that level to understand what's required. And then not that realism is always the thing with art,
but if you can do realism, you can do anything else.
Yes. If you can push that skill set, right, you can. So I said, well, I'm going to try to do this. I said, this will be good. I found one that was in South Dakota. It was in Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
Yeehaw.
Yeah. Right. Like, so, so I'm telling my friends and my family.
I mean, no distractions. So, so you got that going for you there.
So you're talking about adventure. Like, that's the thing. That's hilarious. My wife and I, like, and my wife was totally up for it. She's like, yeah, let's go, you know? But it's hilarious to think back to telling my family and her family, like, well, what are you going to do? They're like, I said,
I'm going to be in South Dakota for a month.
I'm going to be a fine artist. And I was like, I'm going to go train, you know, and actually it was 3 years. It was like a 3.5 years that we were there for the training. And so it's a long time. It's like 3 to 5 years is like typically what it is. So I'm telling all them, yeah, I want to be a fine artist. I want to do this. And they're all like, okay. They're like, well, where are you going to train? I said, well, I'm not going to go to University of Pennsylvania. I'm not going to do that. I said, I'm going to go with these people in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And it's me and like 3 or 4 other students. And they're all just, I mean, nobody understood. Nobody understood. But the thing was, I knew based on the student work, I was like, these people are the top at what they're doing, at what I wanted at that time, that foundation. They were like doing the best work, that kind of school. And so I said, all right, well, I'm going. And everybody thought I was crazy. But what's funny is I went through there and I was working. So what I would do is I would work a job in the morning at a bakery called Breadsmith that was there in Sioux Falls, this place called Breadsmith. So I'd get up at like 4, go work there till about lunch, like 12. And then from about 1 to 8 or 1 to 9 or whatever, I'd go to the studio and work. And that was my everyday, you know, besides Sunday. So it was that for about 3.5 years. I don't even remember a lot of it, to be honest with you. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't remember it. And my wife and I, like, we had no money. So like it was... I remember 1 month we ate lentils like for the whole month. Like, we just ate lentils and I was able to bring bread home from work and now she can't even have it. Like we found out, like I was like probably slowly killing her. Cause she, it's a whole long story, but she ended up getting really sick and all these doctors couldn't figure out what it was. Well, she was allergic to, she was celiac. She was allergic to gluten and stuff. Jeez. And so she had gotten so bad. She was like eating, but she was down to like 80 pounds and should be like 120, you know, she's like down to 80 and it's like, it was crazy. I was carrying her around the house. It was crazy. So, but I was killing her slowly with that bread, but it tasted good though. It was good. It was good. We'd be like, we can afford olive oil and lentils and we could dip the bread and just so, you know, but that was only for a month. It was fine, you know, but we made it through that. And I had a skill set then that was very, you know, developed. And so then I had like the technical side, like a musician that could play the instrument well, but hasn't written any songs.
Scales all day long.
Right. So then I had to sort of
a song that people like to listen to.
Right, right, exactly. And so I was like, I was making like $4,000 a year or something like that, you know? And I remember when I sold my first painting, like when I made this painting, and it was this, actually the story with it was a still life, and there was this bowl that was cracked and part of it, the top like slid over. And my wife, she found it at this like flea market or something, and she saw it, and when she had gotten it, it was in the store, it was together. But then the person dropped it that was packing it up, and she saw it broken. And this is another thing where my wife's so intuitive, and they said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I'll get you another one." She goes, "No, give me that one," because she was getting it from me. She goes, "Give me that one." So she gave it to me.
Like all the other bowls.
Right. Exactly. And so she was so intuitive with that. And so that was my first painting I sold. And I remember telling the person, like, they were like, "Whoa," all my friends were like, "Listen, don't undercharge for your paintings. Don't do this." And, I told her, I said, "Well," she said, "how much is this?" I said, "Well, this is $1,200 like that." And I'm thinking inside, I'm like, she's never going to pay that, you know? And she's like, "Okay, that's fine." You know, and this and that, she was an art collector. She goes, "Yeah, that's fine." And I said, "Oh, yeah. Like, I'm like, yeah, I do this all the time." And she's like, "Just give you a check or whatever." It's like, "Yeah, that's fine, you know." And I was like, "Yes, yeah!" First one ever. So, anyways, that's sort of the scope of things. And like when I was training, I'll never forget the day that it changed for everybody else was when I sent back my cast drawings, those casts that I talked about. Mm-hmm. And my family said, "Well, we didn't know you were sculpting." And I said, "I'm not sculpting." I said, "That's a drawing." And they were like, "Whoa." They got it. They got it at that point. Like they got it. And so it's been a slow progression. First, it was like $4,000 a year. Then it was eight, you know, then 30, then a decent living. You know what I mean? I'm not making bank at all. You know what I mean? But I love what I do.
Yeah.
I mean, I get up every day. I absolutely love what I do. And half of that is teaching too. And I intentionally have gone that direction because I just love it. And so I like half of it's like making that art, half of it is teaching, and that's awesome. The way I want to keep it. It's great.
That's
so
awesome.
It's been a slow progression, but people back then, they said, "What's going to happen if you fail?" That's what everybody said to me.
"I'll go back to work at the bakery," right, or whatever. Like
that's what I said. I said,
I'll go back to filing.
Right. Exactly. I said, "At least I know I tried. At least I can like hold my head high and say I tried for something." I said, "But you guys," I said, "what happens if I succeed?" I said, "What does that do? How does that change things?" I said, you know, and they were like, "Oh, I guess so." And I was like, "That's a possibility, you know?" Mm-hmm. So I've passed that on, like that idea. My dad helped me with that. Like he really did. Like he was always realistic about what goals you could set, you know? And I was a big time dreamer. And so is he. He's like, "Listen, you always have to be realistic about the work it's going to take and what you're going to have to sacrifice and all that." He said, but he said, "John, we're not talented people." It's true. Like our family, we're just plotters. We just keep going. He's like, you and I, we just keep going. And that's how I've been. I feel like it takes me twice as long to learn things, but I'm willing to do it every day and fail every day and have fun in the process. So, awesome. So it's been fun, man. So that's sort of my journey. It's been like 20 years, which is crazy.
Wow.
That's crazy. I've been doing it for 20 years, you know, making money for like 15, but
hey, that's all right.
Yeah. It took a while, but it's fun, man. Really, really cool. So that was my biggest, I think, adventure. And I didn't realize, I feel like that journey and that unlocked for me what it really means to be good at something or to really pursue something. Mm-hmm. It actually helped me be a better dad and husband, because the sacrifices that you have to go through, you can't really explain it to somebody that hasn't been there, that done something like that, you know, but the sacrifice you have to make and the day to day, just like slog of, you know, going through all that, like, and then you start to love it. Like you start to, I remember I was like complaining when my kids were younger, like, "Oh man, like diapers, whatever, like this and that, like, I can't wait till they can do this. I can't wait till they can do that." I kept looking to the future, like saying, "I can't wait till," basically what I was saying is like, "I can't wait till it's easier for me," you know?
Yeah.
But that's basically what I was saying. And
I've had many of those statements to myself.
Right.
This morning.
Right. Totally. Totally. And it's easy to think that way, but and that's the thing, but the cool thing about it for me was I learned through that process of really sacrificing to get there. What was the joy is in the process.
Yeah.
The joy is in the process. And so it changed the way that I was viewing changing diapers or playing a board game with the kid when they're like, they're not even paying attention yet. Yeah. Or they're just like knocking the things over 500 times
off. Cause you start with Candyland and Chutes and Ladders, and then you end up where we're at now. And I could play Battletech with my son and he'll paint the figures with me.
Oh man. Okay. All awesome. Right. Hold up a second. We've got the nerd vibe going now too. I got a whole closet full of stuff like that. That's so funny. We can talk about that some other time, but if we do come to visit you,
offline.
Oh man, we're my son and I, we're just like that. We have all that stuff too. It's really fun.
Would you like to co-teach a workshop on miniature painting?
Right. Actually, you know what's funny is I probably would be pretty crappy at it because the methodology is different. Like I've watched some people do it and they don't. Like if I could, my one buddy had a miniature and I actually did an illustration of his character, like just painted it in Photoshop. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh, he loved it. It was like this weird, like eagle dude with the staff or something. But
this is why I keep the beard around. Yeah. I've got the contemplation juices going. That's right. We could do some fun stuff together with that.
That's right. Like, that's right.
Hey, let's,
but the actual painting of the miniatures though, I don't think there's a whole methodology. They put a dark on first to like fill the sometimes. Like the crevices and then go. Yeah, there's like, it's a different thing. It's different. It's I could probably learn
contrast
it.
And brush control. That's 80% of the game. So.
Okay. Then I probably could do it. I mean, I probably could do it, but maybe I could pick it up pretty quick, I guess, but
I think you could. Cause a lot of the skills different. Are transferable. Like I'm just now, like I've been painting 3D, you know, miniatures since I was like seventh grade or something. And
nice.
I'm halfway decent. Like most people who appreciate like what a good miniature is like, yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah.
I'm not a pro painter or anything by any stretch, but 2D stuff. I'm like, how do I like, I've already got the nose and the face and the stuff like already to paint by numbers.
Yep.
But like drawing it from scratch and then painting it, like that's the next frontier for me.
It's tricky, man. But just like anything though, it's like, there's a set of fundamentals. And those fundamentals like scales or like whatever, or like understanding like the music theory or even on guitar, like I play guitar too. Like it's that's what I played in the band I was in. And there's different like exercises that you have to do to unlock a skill set. So like a certain type of picking method, you know, like alternate picking or inside, they call it inside picking. If you're in between two strings, like, and you have, that's a hard way to pick quickly. So you like build up all these fundamentals and practice those fundamentals. And once those fundamentals are in place, then it's about how perfectly you execute those fundamentals that gets there. So it's the same thing. Like the 2D stuff, if you've painted actually and done those figures for a long time, if I could probably give you the drawing side, if I gave you the drawing, I bet you, if you painted over top of one of my drawings, like you probably could do a pretty good job. You know,
because
you
would understand. That'd be fun.
That would be fun. It would be fun. It'd be fun.
So,
totally, man.
Before we go down another rabbit hole for people that may not be as entertaining for them to listen to as it is for us to talk about.
That's right.
I want to illustrate a really important point there that I think we've been spiraling around is if you want to learn how to do something, you just need to be able to figure out, okay, how do we break this into its component parts?
Right.
How do we deconstruct this big amorphous thing I want to do
into
little chunks?
Yep.
And then do those little chunks in the right order.
Right.
With some stakes in play. I'm stealing this formula from Tim Ferriss, the DIS method. So deconstruct, break it down into little Lego blocks, and then sequence, which order do I need to do those Lego blocks
That's
in?
That's right.
And also select, okay, what 20% of these Lego blocks would give me 80% of the results I'm after.
Right.
And then of those 20%, then we put them in order and then we put some stakes in the game. Like you've like, hey, I want to make a living at this.
Right.
That's some pretty high stakes.
Right.
You know, maybe you don't want to go and make a living at fine art like Jonathan does. Maybe you just want to learn a martial art so that you can defend yourself.
Right.
Or you want to learn how to paint miniatures because it'd be really fun to do with your kids.
Right.
You know, if you can put some stakes in it of like, no, this really means something to me. Even if you need to make it up artificially, like, okay, if I don't do the thing that I said I'm going to do by the time I'm going to do it, I'm going to give $100 to the Republican Party. And I'm a Democrat.
Right.
For example.
Right.
Not that I'm a Republican or a Democrat. It was just than I do. No,
I'm with you, man. I'm with you.
Give it to an anti-charity and have someone keep you accountable to it.
Totally. There's some
methods for that. But, you know, this adventurous life can be had. It's attainable with perseverance.
Yep.
And, you know, you don't need to know the whole trail. You just need to know where to put your foot next.
Yep. And that's the thing. And you know, you were talking about martial arts, and like when I started doing MMA training, it was the same. I was looking for, and I would ask people questions because I'd already done art. So I was like, and I remember my coach saying, you kind of understand what it takes to be good at this. He's like, it's weird because you're not good at it yet. And I was like, well, and actually I said the same thing in reverse to the coach here. Cause like, he was talking about when people would come in and ask to fight right away, they don't even have any training. They're like, when can you get me a fight? And I said, the fact that they don't understand that people have to sacrifice their lives, like a large portion of their lives to be good at this, I said, really kind of shows that they're not good at anything. Because if you've become good at something,
you know, anything, what it takes,
anything, right. You know what it takes. So I would never walk into like a business meeting full of people that have been businessmen for like 25 years and be like, just tell me what's the secret. Just tell me what the secret is. Like there is absolutely like no secret. And it's just like, they have so much experience and they have so much and anything like a mountain climber will just, what do I need to do? Just tell me, you know, it's like, well, there's so much to it. Like, you know, whatever it's, you know, and so I think it kind of shows when a person treats any craft with a disrespect like that, it kind of shows that they've never really sacrificed to be good at anything. Cause if you have, you wouldn't do that. You know what I mean? That's the same thing like parenting. Right, it's like parenting. It's like anything, you know, you know, if you don't understand, if you think parenting is going to be easier, you think like, think going out and fighting, you know, fighting an MMA is going to be easy. I use those two because they're very similar to the abuse you take.
You know? Yeah. The amount of cross shots you take in parenting and martial arts are very similar.
That's really funny.
A number of times you get headbutted in the throat.
But what was interesting about what you said that I haven't heard is adding in the stakes. Like that's fascinating because I haven't heard that side of things, like, but that really does, like adding in the stakes there really does change things because, you know, you, so even if you're with a partner or a person and you're training like grappling or whatever in MMA, like you can get hurt, right? And even if they're not hurting you bad, like you still can get, it's uncomfortable or whatever. Mm-hmm. So you have that, but then if you're actually fighting, of course, the stakes are even higher, you know, but same thing for me when I was training as an artist, like I moved out there, did that. Like, and you know, what's funny is about 3 years into the training or about 4 or 5 years. Yeah. Like probably between 3 to 5 years, I was thinking I've been doing this for a while and I'm not very good yet. Like I was good, but I was not great, you know, not at the professional level. I was like, but I'm really committed. And I was like, if this doesn't work out, this is going to be really bad. I'm going to have to reset. Mm-hmm. And then 6 years in, I was making just a little bit of money. And I was like, if this doesn't work out, now I'm even more committed. Now I'm 20 years in and I've got a Bible degree and I'm an artist. I'm like the most unmarketable person on the planet. You know,
yeah, I'm making myself more unemployable every day.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. So the stakes, I feel like now I think, and now I've got kids, the stakes are even higher. So it does drive you to keep working and keep doing better. And, you know, when you understand that, so that's a fascinating part of that I hadn't thought about, you know, adding that component.
Yeah. If you want to dig more into that, the 4-Hour Chef by Tim Ferriss, like you don't have to read the whole book. But there's the front section on meta learning, like learning about how to learn skills.
Right.
Gold. Like that's worth the price of admission. I think you can get the book for $10 now because it's been out for a few years.
That's cool.
It's if you want to learn new skills or teach them to someone else is absolutely worth the price of admission.
Well, exactly what you were describing is what I do when I teach. So like, I will tell them, I'll say, listen, what do you want to do? And they'll say, I want to be able to paint this particular type of thing or whatever, you know, whatever, I don't want to get too involved there, but they'll say a certain specific thing and I'll say, okay, well, let's, you know, break that down. That's what I say. These are the skills you need. I'm like, now you need to go back and create exercises that will make you more proficient at these particular skills and then bring them all together to do this thing. So it's really funny. I've always kind of worked that way. And so that Lego concept is really good. Because that's the way I've done that for myself. And, mm-hmm. and I have a bunch of challenges going on right now artistically. Like I've had problem areas that have been exposed that I've had to fix. And mm-hmm. so then I create exercises to fix those things and then hopefully conquer that thing and turn it into a strength and then move on to the next thing and then move on to the next thing. And
yeah,
so I don't really feel like I'm doing the work I want to do yet. I need like 20 more years or something, but
we always need 20 more years.
I know. It's true.
Oh my gosh. This has been so fun. We should definitely do this again. Maybe do a part two sooner rather than later. Which I don't say that very often. So,
Okay. I talk so much though, too. I'm sorry.
No, it's so okay.
That's what causes that.
Yeah. I mean, as much as I love having everybody on that I get to interact with, like, I feel like there's a lot more really good stuff that we could, noodle on. So,
awesome. I'm down for it.
Be happy to have you back on.
Let's do it. Dude, we got a lot of connections here, man. We got the nerd connection.
Oh my gosh.
You know, the spiritual connection. We've got the, you know, we've got the outdoors connection. We got the martial arts connection.
Oh, yeah. We got a lot going on there. So in the meantime, between part one and part two, whenever that is, where can people follow along with what you're doing?
You can catch me on Instagram. Like most of my stuff is just like, so it's Jonathan Hardesty, like J-O Nathan, like that. Just Jonathan Hardesty. Hardesty is H-A-R-D-E-S-T-Y. So my Instagram is John Hardesty, J-O-N Hardesty. And then my website is just jonathanhardesty.com. Yeah, that's probably the best place. Instagram is where I post a lot of like the updates and right now I'm doing a bunch of textures. And so like, that's one of my challenges because I had issues with textures and stuff. So, I'm working on that and I'm almost at 500. I was doing 500 of those. And if you think like they take like an hour a piece, that's 500 hours. So it's a lot, you know,
and they don't just take an hour a piece, I imagine.
Right. Sometimes they take less, but most of the time they take, you know, a little bit more, you know, but, yeah, so that's been fun coming to the end of that. And like I said, ironing out those problems one at a time, but also the site, if anybody wants to learn art, you can go to schoolism.com. There, I teach some classes there as well. That would be good for you guys to check out too. So lots of great artists there.
We'll make sure to put some links to those in the show notes. Yeah. And man, it's been awesome chatting with you. Looking forward to the next time we get to hang out and whenever that is. It's been great.
We might be up there coming to Indiana, man. Yeah. I'm telling you, I'm going to work it out. I need to learn how to. I don't know how to do archery. You got to teach me.
There we go. Yeah. We'll do archery and miniature painting. It'll be great.
That's great. Sounds good.
All right. We'll see you soon, Jonathan. Take care.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of the Anthem of the Adventurer. Hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you follow along with all of our adventures on Instagram at the Anthem of the Adventurer and on our blog, anthemoftheadventurer.com. We'll have our monthly adventure challenges continuing into the new year, and we have just a few episodes left of the podcast before it takes a bit of a rest starting in 2022. So if you're listening to this in November and December of 2021, make sure that you sign up for all of our email updates so you don't miss a thing while the team and I write the book. So enjoy the last few episodes, sign up for all the email updates, and we'll see you out there.